Test, test, test. Test, 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 test.
Hello, hello. Oh, oh. Yep. 1, 2. Yep.
Shift it over.
1.
Oh, what?
2.
Oh, come on now.
1.
Serious. Oh, is a leg.
Serious party foul.
Somebody's leg.
Welcome to Flipping Off, a purpose-driven podcast about flipping houses and making a difference.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Melina Boswell here, co-founder of New Wealth Advisors Club. I'm sitting here today in the studio with six of my favorite people. And today is a bag of mixed emotions. And so I have Frank Luna with me, Tim Wilkinson, John Slater, Oscar Solaris, and my oldest son, David Boswell. Many of you probably know, or if you don't know, we experienced the tragedy of losing my husband, Dave, on March 14th. And so today is our first day back in the studio for a podcast after his entrance into glory. So it's really weird, you can imagine, trying to decide what do we do today, how do we do it, how do we move forward. And so we are doing exactly what I've been doing every single day since the day Dave went home. And it is to, we have two goals in mind today, and that is number one, to honor Dave in who he was and what he meant to each one of us, and what he stood for, and what he created. And so I have my inner circle here with me today to help me accomplish that. So it's funny, as we're sitting here in this podcast right now, normally, well, we're actually sitting across the table from each other, and I can't look at them. So I'm facing the wall because it's difficult for me to look them in the eye as we embark on this journey. You know, for fear of losing it. Not going to say we won't lose it. Some of us may lose it at some point today, but our goal is to really let you in a little bit into the inner workings of the club and what we are doing. It became very clear to me early on that we would carry on with the club and the legacy that Dave started and has really opened the door to allow us to walk in. So I think we're going to hear from each person here. As you guys know, we don't ever script anything. We have a conversation ahead of time, like what is the goal and of each podcast, and so we just operate from that space. So as we start today, I thought it would be fun to ask each one of these guys to share with us one moment that they experienced with Dave. And I kind of want to hear something quirky and funny. Like, some things about Dave are really, many of you may or you may not know, but Dave was, you know, like borderline genius kind of guy. So he was really, really smart, and he had the biggest heart. But he was, that made for a little bit of awkward. Dave had some awkward, he was really kind of awkward, which if you get to know me, you'll know that's one of the things I loved about him, because I really love awkward, weird people, right? That's why the club, I call it the home of the misfits, because I really like misfits. I don't like people. I mean, not that I don't like people, but I really like the misfits. And Dave, ironically, the more I've been thinking about it, the more I realized Dave was like the ultimate misfit. And his, right? Isn't that kind of true? So I just thought it'd be fun today for us to talk a little bit about some of the things that maybe you wouldn't know about Dave, that you wouldn't see from the stage. And every person here got to experience life with him. Every person here today has been on vacation with him and been with him in places where his hair was really, you know, let down, and he would, and you got to experience the real Dave. And there was a lot of like really great things that I think people don't know about him. So I didn't really tell them that this is what I was going to do, but I would like for each one of you guys to share something like something really funny, especially if it's awkward, or something that was awesome about Dave that you got to experience with him that, you know, people maybe wouldn't from his outside life know. So, haha, there you go. Threw him a curveball. So does anybody, who wants to start first? Who would like to start first? Who has something in mind?
Everybody seems to be staring at me. So.
At Frank.
I was going, when you were talking, I was thinking, and when I think of different moments, there were so many very similar moments because of his sense of humor. And I guess I have a weird sense of humor too.
Yeah, you're definitely a misfit.
It seemed like every time we had a conversation, we were joking about something, it'd always escalate. Almost like we would have a competition about who could say the most awkward thing about a moment or something. And it was rooted around kind of being creative. What's interesting is I don't have many relationships like that with people where I feel comfortable doing that. I'm always very reserved. But once you get to know me, I'm probably joking almost every moment. There's something very, what started that, as many people know, Dave was my tax accountant for many years. So I would meet with him regularly. In our first meeting, we just got to know each other. I was kind of thrown into his office. I think it was his first year. Mm-hmm. And the tax accountant had a very odd name that introduced me to Dave. So when I met Dave, he looked really, really young. I mean,
he was really, really young.
So he looked really young too. Yeah. So he was wearing glasses. And I don't know how old, and it was like 2000, 2001, mm-hmm. Not really sure.
He was young.
He was very young. And I remember he was wearing a yellow shirt and he had a pocket protector.
He did not. He did.
He did. You know, he wore glasses at that time. He had a pocket protector.
Nerd alert.
Well, you know, he looked like a tax accountant.
Yeah.
So I sat down and I was like, I wanted to ask him how old he was because I don't think he had a goatee or anything. If he did,
it was very light.
Yeah, I think it was. So this is the funniest moment for me that I can remember when I first met him. Mm-hmm. And what was funny about it years later to me was in meeting him, I had no idea who this man was or who he was going to be in my life. Mm-hmm. But it was a really straightforward meeting. We had, you know, we joked around a little bit. But over the years, we got to know each other. And for me, I don't really, if you guys realize this, I don't like being told what to do. I don't.
No,
if
no.
I, yeah,
no.
I know it's weird.
I think we all do.
I don't know if you guys know this about me, but.
No, that's a shocker.
Really? Yeah, I thought it would be. So after getting to know him, like I usually would seek out counselor advice on maybe the internet or read a book about something. I would never ask for advice from individuals because the truth was for me, there wasn't a lot of people in my life that I respected enough to have asked for advice. So I got to know Dave over a couple of meetings and one year, he decided to start giving me some unsolicited advice. I don't think he knew my personality at that point. Maybe he had an idea or an inkling. But what sticks out for me is the advice that he gave me, what it was around. And it had to do with my rebellious nature. So he told me, you go to church, I see where you tithe. We're talking about that, which, what?
So funny, he'd go there with you.
Yeah, I mean, we never, he knew I went to church, and he went to Harvest, and we had shared that. That was one commonality we had. And he decided to, critique me, or he called me out on
it. Challenged you.
He challenged me with the amount of money I was tithing. That was his first counseling session. And if you're a Christian, like, you don't do that. So I remember when he was telling me this, very few would probably see me blush, but I remember I was getting embarrassed and I was like, what? This guy is nuts. And What's also weird is I'm totally the person to do the same thing to people.
100%. Yes.
Like, so many times I've started to tell somebody something like that, and they look at me with that same look I'm sure I gave Dave when he was looking at me. And
that's so funny. I never even knew that, Frank.
Yeah. And so I know he could totally tell, like, I was like, was I getting mad? Was I getting embarrassed because he was calling me out? Was what something was stirring? And at that point, I mean, I really didn't know Dave very well. But there was something about the guy when you met him. He was very straightforward. He kind of commanded respect. He was very, he was just that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So I don't know a lot of people like that. There's not a lot of people like that. So when he was telling me this, I was having this inner battle. Like, what do I do? Do I get another tax guy? What am I? Kathy can attest to that. There's been some conversations. Mm-hmm. So at that point, there was nothing that David ever said or did for me to not have respect for him. And what he was telling me was the truth. So at that point, I decided to put aside my frustration and anger, and it turned into a funnier conversation, and I kind of just let it go. And, you know, now years later, I'm very glad I let that go. Or else I wouldn't be sitting right here.
That's so funny. That's a great story, Frank. I never knew that. Yeah. I love that. I can so understand it. So what that tells me about, like, I just know that if he went there with you, it was because he felt, you know, comfortable, because he wouldn't do that with just anybody. You must have professed your faith.
Yeah.
So he was going to hold you to it. That's who he was.
Yeah. Right. Next.
You know, it's so funny. Dave's two-word purpose statement was provoking greatness in others. And when I hear that story, that is what he was doing in you. Provoking greatness in you.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
I got to enjoy a lot of time outside the office with Dave on the golf course. And for me, it was a great opportunity to see Dave in a very different light. Mm-hmm. You know, he was such an awesome guy at the club for, you know, what he did for everybody, and everybody could see the kind of person he was. But to actually get out there on the golf course and, you know, be free from, you know, the daily life of business and, you know, those stresses. And, you know, Dave introduced me to a couple of his friends that we went golfing with, a couple of people from, you know, the retreat, the community, you know, where he lived. And what was funny for me was, you know, meeting some of these new people that Dave had already played with, Dave had built a relationship with, and here he is, he's introducing me. And, you know, we played, I remember exactly where we were, up at Glen Ivy, a couple of guys that I'd never met. And for those that don't know this about me, I have my other side, my slightly foul language side that comes out occasionally. No. And it's the English soccer side of me that the hooligan, as Oscar says, or my wife would say, the, you know. And we're in the middle of playing, and, you know, things are going great, we're playing well, and, you know, we're just having a good time. And, you know, we get to one hole, and I, you know, we're both on the green, I think, in two shots, and then next minute I four putt, and, you know, Dave's kind of trying to keep a straight face, and the words that came out of my mouth right then, and literally these two guys that I'd never met before just stood there staring at me for maybe 4 or 5 seconds, and then suddenly just burst into laughter. And we're all, you know, well, they're all laughing. I'm absolutely fuming because I took four putts. But it became one of the things that we did. You know, I'd then listen to Dave when he would make mistakes. He'd try and copy the English accent and say the same words that I was saying that don't even make a sentence. But, you know, it really explains how you feel. And it carried us around. And everybody we played with, it was just common now that when you made mistakes, it was the John Explicits that needed to come out in the middle of the golf course at full voice to let out that steam.
So. That's so funny. And they would do it in their British accent.
Yes.
That's
in
hilarious.
Their British accent.
That's so funny. Which Dave couldn't do well.
No, he couldn't.
He was horrible at that. Like, he wasn't a good impersonator at all.
Kind of sounded a little bit like Oliver Twist, I think. But, you know, please, sir, can I have some more? But no, it's, you know, we had so many fun times on the golf course. But to kind of take a different side of Dave, the way that he was, you know, as we all know, he started to take his golf very serious. Just like everything that he did, he wanted to perfect everything.
Yes.
And he came from, you know, shooting horrible scores to really, you know, working on his game and really becoming very good. And, you know, there's a specific hole at Glen Iver that's a nightmare for us. And two sides to it is one, you know, Dave's playing really well and suddenly he puts three balls into one of the houses and you hear it boing off the roof and, you know, hope that's not a window. But to kind of tell the type of person Dave is, if he ever hit a ball that it hit a house, he would drive over there, he'd go look for the ball, and he'd go see if there was any damage. And he always said, you know, the first thing I'm going to do is apologize and then get my checkbook out and pay for whatever I need to pay for.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that I've played with a lot of people who it's almost, you know, you hit the ball and it goes and hits a house and you hear it and they kind of want to get in the car and drive away and turn the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's 100% who Dave was. He operated in, that was an integrity issue for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, I've got a million stories that, you know, that for me, the memories with Dave are seeing him laugh the way that he laughs when he's trying to be super serious, but at the same time, he just can't help it. He can't help it. But it was what made us relax. And, you know, it became a saying for us, our swing oil, as we called it, that, you know, we'd always go to play golf and say, okay, we enjoy his golf. Maybe we'll have a drink at some stage. And no, let's be serious today. Let's play golf. Let's just drink water. Water and Gatorade. It's 100 degrees, water and Gatorade. And usually by about the eighth hole, we'd say, okay, we need a little swing oil now. Just
swing oil,
one
yes.
little drink to loosen up the muscles. And invariably, we would then play very well.
Better.
And although I do want to share the final comment, it was down at Dos Lagos when we played, where we got stuck behind every man, his dog, his grandma. They were the slowest players in the world. And the trolley lady came past with the drinks and we maybe had one too many. And we literally spent 40 minutes digging balls out of one of the ponds there at Dos Lagos. We completely forgot all about golf. We were laughing, giggling. We were falling in the edge of the water. We were dragging balls out and everybody was just going past us and just ignoring us and we were like, have a nice game, and we're pulling balls out of the pond. So I think we got about 50 balls that day out of the pond. So
wow, that's great.
Then I had to stop playing golf because we were struggling to drive the golf cart that day. So yeah, fun times.
Yes.
Fun times.
Yes. All right, so thanks John, it's a great story. I guess we're gonna hear from Tim next.
Yeah,
all right.
I've been thinking about a couple things on a kind of funny note. I mean, I always love the way Dave would tell a story, and I always go back to him telling the story of protecting his fish, yeah. Right? I mean, that it's a long story, and I can't go into too much detail about it because it would take forever, but he was so animated. He would actually do the physical activity that, you know, he was just so animated and into telling the story of what was going on, you know, crawling down the stairs and, you know, hiding behind the window, you know, opening the window a crack and hiding. And just the way that he would tell a story was just so fun to watch. But on a personal note, he just... he just had the best way to really drive a point and provoke greatness. Mm-hmm. And I always think back to how, like, he just had a few words for me one day, mm-hmm. to really drive the point of my own personal value. Wow, sorry guys.
Don't be sorry.
Oh, wow. Anyway, so I think I got it under control now. But he just had the greatest way to say just a few words that
You know, like in my particular instance, he was kind of just giving me a little bit of a jab about like how much value I hold for myself, you know. And he just said to me, or he said, effectively, he just told me that I would do it for $50 and a like $50 and a Jolly Rancher. It rings through to me all the time. Like I'm $50 and a Jolly Rancher, and I have to remember all the time that that's not me. I'm worth way more than that because I used to just treat myself that way. If that makes sense.
It makes sense. It makes sense to me. So
yeah, it's, I mean, I feel like I'm not being clear in the story to people who don't know me or don't know us. But I know me, and before I came to the club, I held little value for myself. I did have a very big, I would say I would have a very big ego, but that was just to hide the fact that I had very little value for myself. Mm-hmm. But Dave just had this way of provoking greatness in people and specifically in me by saying things that like kind of made me chuckle, but really made me think like, holy cow, like that is me. And I don't want to be that. Like I am not $50 in a Jolly Rancher.
Right. So it was, yeah, I think that's such a, I'm glad you shared that story, but it was, Dave had a way of, seeing people exactly as they are. He had an uncanny ability to look through you and know exactly what you need. And, you know, all that stuff that you were talking about, like you walked in with a little bit of an ego, which was really hiding the fact that you never felt good enough. And and Dave knew that about you. And the way he viewed you was great. So the way he was able to communicate that to you was not to sit there, like the way to communicate with you, Tim, is not to say, oh, Tim, you're so great. Oh, Tim, you're this, you're that, because you were struggling with ego.
Right.
And ego is a block, right? And so the way Dave got to you was by just piercing you, by saying, well, of course you'd do that. You know, you would take that deal all day long. You'd do it for $50 and a Jolly Rancher.
Right.
And it was, I remember that. And I remember that. It was a piercing words to hear for you, but I also know it rang true to you, right?
Absolutely. It was a turning point in my career as a real estate investor for sure. And it was a turning point in my own personal, who I hold myself to be, because I realized that I believed my own ego up until that point, and that rang so true that I had to question it. Because I kind of chuckled at the time. It was one of those little funny sayings that he would say, and it kind of.
Well, he never used that for anybody else, by the way.
Well, that's what I'm. But I mean, he had little things that he would say, mm-hmm. like to different people. Absolutely. But he had just a great way of putting words together in a way that would just pierce you, mm-hmm. and provoke, mm-hmm. really provoke. Because that didn't inspire me.
Nope.
Dave was not inspiring greatness. He wasn't inspiring anything. Mm-hmm. He would absolutely provoke me to do way more than I even considered I could. And it was just huge for me.
That's so good. That is exactly right. It's a perfect analogy of who he was, for sure. It's really good. It was an absolutely unbelievable gift that he had. And I can tell you he did it in me all the time. He made me a way better mother, wife, business owner, mentor, coach, daughter. He just made me a better person no matter what, because he was constantly provoking greatness in me, always. And I'm thankful that I told him that a lot. So I am definitely thankful that I gave him gratitude for him being that for me in my life. I'm clear I wouldn't be who I am today if it weren't for him, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim. Oscar, can we hear from you?
Yeah, let's get something funny again.
Yeah. Whatever. You share whatever you feel funny. Led to share. funny.
The thing that that you were talking about right now, Tim, just I was thinking about it, and how did he affect me or impact me, right? And I was realizing that he knew that I'm the guy that sits back and watches everything play out and observes, right? So we never really had those types of conversations where he would like push me in a certain direction. But what he did was that he would act a certain way. Mm. He would set an example with his actions and his words that I didn't have to be told. It was like, oh, that's for me, right? And I was able to take that away and use it and build myself through it. So it was interesting how he was able to really cater his way of communicating to that person, like you were saying, Melina, right? It's very specific to that person and very targeted to each individual. So they got what they needed to get clearly, right? And sometimes it was zero words. Mm. It was just an action. Mm. Or it was a behavior, right? Or it was how he reacted to something that I knew I would be like, delete, right? and I took that and learned that, wow, you know, there's a different approach, or there's a different way of looking at it, or there's a different perspective. And so it helped me to to change a lot of who I was to where I am today. So, so that kind of triggered that thought, because that's not even where I was at when she asked the question, right, of share something. But on another note, I don't know if you remember this, Melina, but I went out door knocking with Dave.
I do remember that. I do.
Right? And I don't know who, Frank's looking at me like, what the?
What?
Yeah, way back in the day.
So I might be the only one that's ever gone out.
I think you're right.
Door knocking with Dave.
I think you're right.
And
except I never even heard of this.
and it was in, yeah, other than Melina, mm-hmm. and of all places, it was in Carlsbad, mm-hmm. right? And so it was an interesting trip to go down to San Diego. So there was a lot of conversation time. and then when we get to the doors, we did what we do, right? Which is we prayed before we went out and started having conversations and talking to people. But all I could think in my head at the time was, why is he door knocking with me? Mm. Was one. And the other is like, well, he used to be a cop, so I want to see how this is going to play out. Right? How's he going to walk up to that door?
Did he cop knock it?
all I could think of was him just banging the door down, right? But wasn't that, obviously. But it was good. It was interesting. It was a whole different approach of, and a whole different side of Dave, right, that mm-hmm. I never would have seen had I not taken the opportunity to drive out there. And what I realized later on was like, oh, he was getting to know who I am. Mm-hmm. He was understanding more about how I am through the conversation. Mm-hmm. We spent time, we had dinner down there and all that. So it was cool. But, and so I, you know, it's one of those times that I value that I got to spend that time with him mm-hmm. and do all that. And then I don't let go of the water bottle thing because I know it drove him bananas, right? And he just gave me that stare down. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna go do it again. Let's see how far I can push him with this, right?
It's so funny. There's a common thread with every one of you here. Every one of you have now acknowledged your either rebellious and or prideful nature.
True, right?
Yeah, it takes a real leader to be able to lead guys like this. That's for sure.
Yeah, we're a mixed bag of goods for sure. So, you know, actually Adam was asking me, because the last time I did a presentation, I had two bottles of water. He's like, man, we got to get you a permanent bottle. Like, no, yeah. I'm going to continue to use a plastic bottle because every time it clicks for me, it reminds me of Dave. Aww. So that's me.
That's awesome. Thank you. So, yeah, it makes me really, really proud and excited in the weirdest way. You know, I'm personally experiencing a bag of emotions. But I just realized listening to each one of you, like, really, Dave was such a big person that he wanted big people around him. And every one of you are really big. You know, Dave was not the guy who wanted to keep people small around him. He wanted to have big people around him because he wanted everybody to be bigger. He really did live out provoking greatness. He wasn't about keeping small people down. He was all about making people bigger, better, and faster. And so as we have made decisions to move forward, I'll just share with everybody. Both of our sons have decided to move back home from Idaho, and to step into the business with us. And so our oldest son, David, is here with us today. And this is the first time he's ever experienced being inside of a podcast recording with us. And it is, you know, this is the new generation, if you will. So I think today I wanted us to honor where we've been, and then I wanted to be able to look forward a little bit. And I didn't really know exactly what this was going to look like, and I still don't until we're sitting here right now. And the reality of our sons stepping into the business with us, I think, is the first step in terms of moving forward. And so I would like everybody to hear from our son, David, and maybe he can share a little bit about why he's made the decision. David, maybe you can just share kind of what it's been like for you. You know, first of all, you're Dave Boswell's oldest son, and many people can imagine it's never been easy to be his children, to be not only his but mine and his. Imagine us being your parents. I used to just always say that to people. Can you imagine me and Dave being your parents? That's like no easy thing. And so David has decided and chosen, both David and Andrew have chosen, to step into the business. And to be completely transparent with everybody out there, right after Dave's passing, my first thought was, I guess I'm moving to Idaho to be with my children. And it was my son David who said, no, I don't think we're supposed to move to Idaho, or you're supposed to move to Idaho. I think I'm supposed to be here. I believe that we are supposed to step into the business. So, son, if you would like to share, maybe if you want to share something about any one thing you want to share about Dad, or why you're here, or, and I know I'm just so putting him on the spot, aren't I? I know. So here he is.
It's so cool for me to listen to you guys and tell all these stories about my dad, because I can paint a visual each moment and exactly how it played out. And it's awesome because he's been the same person for everybody, and I think that's so awesome. It's a testament to who he really was. It's so cool for me to hear how he helped everybody individually, because who I am was shaped 100%, you know, by Dave. And most people, or for anybody who doesn't know, Dave is my stepdad, and I wasn't fortunate enough to, you know, have my biological father in the picture from the beginning. And Dave was, what was he? If he were actually my biological father, he would have been about 15 years old.
Wow! Now everybody knows.
But
yes, I'm a cougar. Fine.
Yeah. Started dating him when he was 16, right?
No. All right, son, go ahead.
As weird as that sounds, it was really a special opportunity, because I got to grow up with somebody who was kind of like a friend, you know, as well as a pretty amazing father who had no other kids, but just fell into that role so perfectly. So I'm going to share a funny story. My brother's going to kill me. But I'm sorry, dude. I love you.
Well, I can't wait to hear this
one.
I
can't wait either.
So Dave was an incredible wakeboarder. He was remarkable on the water. He loved boating and anything extreme that had to do with the water. And so we spent a lot of time at Lake Paris growing up. And for anybody who doesn't know, the lake is, there's a big island in the middle, and it's a one direction lake, so you have to keep going in a circle. And oh man, we round the first corner, and all of a sudden my brother, he has to go to the bathroom. And it's probably, I don't know, help me out, it's maybe another couple miles to go around the island.
Yeah.
It takes a good solid
20 minutes
to get around. So Andrew's just doing the dance over in the corner. And I don't remember if Dave wanted to ride first. We had flat water. We would wake up really early, you know, to get out on the water so he could have glass water. And I think, did he ride?
Yeah,
I can't remember. I think he wanted to ride first. And he's like, you're going to have to hold it, Andrew. So we're making our way around the turn, and finally Andrew's just like, I cannot, I have to go now. My dad's like, he's just getting a kick out of this. He's belly laughing. So, and I, of course, being the older brother, I couldn't get enough of it either. It was hilarious to me, and I could see my brother just getting so mad at everybody, and it just fueled our fire. So finally Dave jumps in the boat, and we speed to the dock, and we're all just laughing the whole time. Andrew's still just mad as can be, and Dave jumps off the boat with Andrew, and they're walking up the dock, and I'll never forget this image. I'm never gonna forget this image. But finally my poor brother, he was probably six years old at the time, he gave it all he had, but he gave up, and
he gave up.
I'll never forget, he reaches down and grabs his pant leg and does a little shake with his shorts, and just out falls this little little dingleberry, as Dave would say. I fell over laughing at my— everybody was laughing, except for Andrew. Andrew was devastated.
He's still devastated.
He's still dealing with it.
And so, of course, in the light of it being so funny, my dad had to find a lesson in there. And so he calls me over, because I was the one laughing the hardest. And he says, take off your shoe. And I'm like, what? Why? What do you mean? And so he said, take off your shoe. Give me your shoe. And so I take off my flip-flop and hand it to him, and he proceeds to swipe the little dingleberry into the water with my shoe. cleans up the dock with my shoe. Tells me, now go clean your shoe off. And walked up to the bathroom with my brother. And as funny and as awesome as that memory is, Dave was the kind of guy to— he was always about the little guy, you know, it didn't matter. He saw my brother in pain, and he still catered to him. And what that taught me was to always have my brother's back, like, you know, no matter what. Since that day, I had a new respect for my little brother, and to always make sure, you know, I just saw it from a different light. It was hilarious. It was hilarious, but there was a lesson in there to learn, and that is how my dad was. He was pretty incredible. So I'm excited to become a part of the business and his legacy and what he really loved. I know he loved you guys so much, and I love all of you so much because of that, and I can see now what he saw in everybody, and I just want to soak up everything that these guys can offer me, because I know my dad poured everything into you, and I just want to be able to serve and do anything that I can to make this business bigger, better, and faster, and live on my dad's legacy. So thank you guys for having me. I love you.
It's our pleasure, man.
Sure. I think it's kind of bittersweet to see David here. You know, it's I've had conversations that, you know, I haven't shared with anybody, where Dave's talked about David and Andrew, especially when we've been out golfing, and, you know, they'll call up and have a chat with him or something, and he'll kind of share with me some of those conversations. And, you know, I've only known David now for probably 3 years, I think, since I first met him. And, you know, I remember him being very apprehensive when he met people for the first time. But even in the last 3 years, I've been able to see David grow to who he is. And, you know, am I right in saying your two word is stirring bravery? Mm-hmm. Was that what it was?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I remember saying one day, I remember seeing David with his kids and seeing how he acted, and really saw that in him. Mm-hmm. So it is bittersweet that David's come down and moving back this way, but it's exciting at the same time. Yeah. Because he is Dave Boswell's son, and he's grown to be the man that he is, and, you know, he's going to move forward with this business.
Yeah, that's a really good good thing to say, John. It's true. I can't believe David shared that story. It's so funny. Like, for—
I'm glad he did.
I am too.
Me too.
I mean, you don't even know how many jokes were around poop on the dock. Like, it was like the never ending. Like, it just gave so much.
Andrew is going to be so excited that it's on—
he's
the podcast.
He's
going to
be so
now.
Happy. It was the best. But yeah, it's so funny. I had no idea when he started sharing about, I was like, is he kidding me right now? All right. He's really going there. All right. But I really love how you tied it together, David. I think it's brilliant. It's true. And David, we were having this conversation a couple of weeks ago and David said, I just want to see Dad. And, I told him, look in the mirror. Cause that's the truth. Because they are Dave Boswell. Who they are is absolutely who Dave was. And I can look at each one of you and I see the same thing and I think the same thing. Like, look in the mirror. If you want to see Dave, look in the mirror, because he absolutely has shaped each and every one of us and who we are. And it is my 100% commitment that we stay that course. And continue to live out Dave's legacy of bigger, better, faster. That is absolutely what we are going to do. So I think it's probably a good time now to sign off. You know, there's something about the dash, right? And I feel like the end of this podcast just needs to be a dash for Dave. The dash that he lived, and that he lived really, really well. So the last thing I want to say is, man, I love you, Dave Boswell, and you did a good dash. So Boswell's out.